Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, May 24th, 2012. A lot of topics to cover tonight, and we are living in a world of peril. I usually end my show by saying, we are at the crossroads. Good night. This world is so messed up. How could people in charge of this world get this world so messed up in 100, maybe 1,000 different ways? It is just absolutely incredible. I first wanted to let you know that last week, and this week I'm again having technical problems. I think there's somebody trying to interfere with what I'm doing here, but just to let you know, at the beginning of last week's show, all my systems 3 minutes before the show crashed. And so, of course, I have a live feed that goes into the radio station WWCR. And so within 3 minutes, I had to bring up my basic systems. I had all of my information stored on the on some of my systems so I could read and observe and look at my notes. And so basically last week's show I did from memory, because I came online, I only had time to get some of the basic systems up. And then this week, once again, looks like having technical difficulties. But anyway, just want to let you know some people, what goes on behind the scenes here, so to speak. Okay, enough of that. The main science topic tonight, I will be talking about how the sun really works. National Geographic, in the latest issue of the June issue, which is now on the newsstands, is talking about solar superstorms, how they could impact our high-tech world. And it's really true. I mean, I talk about this on the radio all the time. But what's makes me worried is all of the hype that's been put into this. We are actually in a solar cycle that is much weaker than normal. So why all of the hype? And National Geographic, in my book, is one of the biggest disinformation sources on the planet when it comes to science and science news. So, and then also coupled with the NASA announcements in previous weeks of their projection that within the next so many years we're going to have a mega storm that could affect Earth. Of course, these things can happen. It's all very possible. But the issue here is the following. Could a solar storm be used as a false flag where they pull the plug on the American electric grid, sending us basically instantly into the cave ages? Nothing would work until they decided to bring the power back on. Obama has been pushing for a smart grid. It would be extremely costly, and of course it would cost the public a lot of money, and the benefit really isn't there. The grid has been designed, it was designed by Tesla basically to operate and allow electricity to flow from one grid element to the other one, and then also protect, to eliminate elements that are causing problems, or if there was a surge in one element of the grid, it would be disassociated with the other elements and therefore provide a safety net. So it's already has intelligence built in to the grid. The only reason I can see for building an intelligent grid is to monitor every ounce of everything that everybody does, because it all operates by electricity. But at any rate, all of the hype about solar storms, and of course I'm on radio many times, I'm called many times on Coast to Coast AM show to talk about the grid issues and solar storm issues, when give solar updates when they happen. But there's also the flip side of that, that it could be used for a false flag event. I wanted to review something that I've been promoting recently. It's on my webpage. It's the very first thing. I call it First Nation. First Nation. In other words, start living your own democracy. And I was talking with John Moore after I was on his show First Hour, was it Tuesday morning, I believe. in on the John Moore Show. And I mentioned this concept of First Nation, and John said, the concept is that you simply start living your democracy. We live in a land where elections are fixed, political parties are are owned by big business. If you form a meeting or start meeting with friends and other people, it's immediately infiltrated. Everything that happens in this country is fixed and controlled. The news media, the court system, on and on. So how do you deal with this? Well, the way you deal with it is by simply, you have to live your own democracy, coupled with the fact that 95% of the people in this country have no clue what's going on. You have to start living your own democracy. And John gave a very good example. He said the Amish, the people that they live on their own, they are independent. Their kids don't go to the doctor and get shots when they're little. And they're the healthiest kids on the planet. They all have bright, happy faces. They're not indoctrinated with all of the hellish influx of video games and music and drugs, all of the other things that kids today have to deal with to try and make, not to mention the school system, which just is ridiculous, sitting at a desk for 12 years in the most active point of kids' lives. Of course you need schooling, of course you have to sit there, but you need a well-balanced life. And the school also just takes over people's lives. It runs people's lives, and they get done raising their kids, and they go, what happened? I don't know my kids. They don't know me. And now they're grown, and they're gone. And the people are wondering what happened. Well, you got taken by the school system. That's what's going on. And the school system took them over, and you didn't raise your kids. That's what's going on. So anyway, the concept of First Nation. By the way, I'm an educator. I taught in university. My very first job was in a high school in a foreign country, teaching for a year, teaching kids from all different countries. So I'm an educator, but my view of education after being in it, after teaching, and after looking at it from both inside and outside is that school really should be more for social issues. And the learning goes on in the student's brain. 95% of what you learn through grade school, high school, and university level, whatever your specialty, is 99% of it is bogus information. It doesn't have anything to do with anything. If you're in economics, it has nothing to do with economics. If you're in physics and math, there's some great information, but once you get into advanced topics like space science, it all becomes garbage. So at any rate, or astronomy, if you're in advanced astronomy, 95% of what they're teaching you has nothing to do with reality, and that's the same with many topics, geology, evolutionary biology. But at any rate, how do you deal with this? I've come up with the concept of First Nation. Here is what I talk about on my webpage. Start living your own democracy. I'm actually reading from my webpage now. It says, I developed this concept as a way to return to our democratic origins. Just a second. As a way to return to our democratic origins that does not require elections or candidates or meetings. Our country has been taken over by psychopaths and mongrel thieves that call themselves bankers. Our elections are fixed, and the majority of people are too dumbed down to imagine that what they were taught in grade school could be flawed. Our borders have been overrun by people looking for a handout that have no clue what democracy and this nation is all about. Democracy and freedom of expression are just words that liars in Congress, all the way down to your local governments, used to hide behind. The solution? Start living your own democracy. I call it First Nation. You do not need an election or a candidate or a meeting. You just decide one day that you are not participating in the BS anymore. You can do this by stopping payments to illegal banking fraud. Stop supporting imaginary money and laws that were passed by people who were never elected by legitimate elections. or rules that have been installed by government agency that are filled with people who were never elected. A good example, if just 5% of homeowners stop paying their house payments, the banks would fold, and they are near that point now. There's no law that says you have to make loan or credit payments. First Nation, throughout history, prosperous countries like the U.S., like Europe, like Greece, and the list goes on. These prosperous countries have been infiltrated by banking schemes, all coming from the same Central European bankers. These banking methods were outlawed in the Old Testament, as they have one and only one goal, to rob the citizens of their hard labors and prosperity. The concept of First Nation is a grassroots plan. No meetings to be infiltrated, no elections to be fixed, no candidates to be bought off and corrupted. Just you living your own democracy. It was the way it was meant to be. First Nation, start living it today. So at any rate, I want people to consider that. And I get feedback from listeners. They say, I try to tell people about your show and have them listen, and people's brains are so locked up and distorted that they cannot imagine anything else going on in the world. People, here's the problem, whether they're just people on the street, they work at a good job, they're educated possibly, like I always say, the more educated the people, the harder it is to get them to listen and think, because they think they know everything. They think they're the smartest person on the planet. How could they possibly be fooled? Well, that's the problem. Egos. Egos and a person finally being crunched economically to the point they have to say, boy, I really got taken to the cleaners. Why is this? Okay, it doesn't start to occur to these people until it hits home. Okay, so anyway, enough of that. I want to talk about cancer again tonight. This is an ongoing issue. Why, after 50 years of medical treatment with chemotherapy being the only possible treatment in the medical community, radiation and chemotherapy, which basically holds the idea that it poisons your body. Okay, say if you have cancer in your lungs or your, lymphoma cancer, or you have leukemia, or you have some other form of cancer in a specific organ, for example, like a bladder. Why is it that they want to poison your entire body and then try and bring it back from the dead? Basically, they've destroyed your immune system. Everything that works in your body is destroyed by chemicals and radiations. This is the bloodletting primitive. This was being used in the 1950s. There has been not a single advancement or change in cancer therapy in over 50, possibly 60 years. How is that with cancer research? I wouldn't give a dime to cancer research because it hasn't produced anything. There are people out there looking into alternatives and finding them. You can find this on the internet, and of course there's mixture of quackery out there. The AMA is sitting on its laurels. I had a good idea the other day for health insurance. Why are people like myself, if I ever had cancer, I would never go to a medical doctor. I would search alternatives, because the first thing the doctor wants to do is to cut you open, and they have no way of curing cancer. They have band-aids, they have masks, or the chemotherapy, where they radiate you and basically poison your body until it is almost dead, and then if you come back from that state, then they claim that you are cured. Another problem with cancer medicine today, if you want to call it that, is that a high percentage of the tests that are given to see if a person has cancer or not, a high percentage of those are flawed. Up to 75% of women who are told that they have breast cancer never had breast cancer at all. And so that's why they claim a cure rate. They treat these women, and then the ones that come back and live, they say they were cured. And they never had it in the first place. What a sick, deranged industry, the pharmaceutical and medical industry of today. So what I'm saying is that there should be another form of insurance for people like myself. If I break my arm, I'll go to a doctor. Other than that, I don't want to talk to a doctor. If I have a sniffle, or if like some people that have kids, if little Johnny has a sniffle, they got to run to the doctor. We're paying for that in our insurance, and there's no alternative insurance for the people that want just basic insurance for what John Moore says, for trauma. That's something that happens to you, a broken arm. You know, you need, say, surgery on, say, a shoulder surgery or something like that where the ligaments are torn apart. Okay, there's reconstructive surgery. Those are things that's way different than being treated by chemo or all the other laundry list of chemicals and pills that people are taking. If those people want that kind of medicine, fine. Let them pay for it and let them pay in a clubhouse of insurance policies that cover those items. I don't want any of that. I wouldn't put any of that in my body. So I don't want insurance that I'm paying for everybody else's problems like that, and I wouldn't go and use that. Okay, so, but of course, they're coupled with the medical industry, and they're all one big happy clubhouse. I have a friend who was diagnosed as cancer who actually did have cancer. After 6 months of testing, they finally determined that he had vitamin D deficiency. When obvious other characteristics of what were going on with him, bleeding and other things like this were going on. And after 6 months of testing, the only thing the doctors could tell him was that he had a vitamin D deficiency. I mean, it is absurd. These people are quacks. They're quacks that are getting paid a lot of money. The average cost of chemotherapy per month per patient is $10,000 for some chemical sludge that comes out of some pharmaceutical company to pour poison in your body. This is big industry. It's big money. The hospitals make off of it, and nobody can change it because it all has to do with big money. I always liken it to NASA with their dirty snowball comet model. They can't change. They've had 50 years of the same garbage, and if they change, they'd have to admit that they were wrong. And so it's the same thing. These are institutionalized buffoons and incompetence. Institutionalized, and it can't change. That's why I've always said, get rid of NASA. Cut it down. Just eliminate it. It is not doing anything. And then bring in, that's like the National Science Foundation. All of these agencies are institutionalized. It's time to push the big red reset button. Get rid of all of this expense, which is not doing anything. That's the problem. These people have monopolized these fields with basically with garbage, and the medical field, unfortunately, is one of those. So what I would encourage people to do, if you have a medical problem, especially in the line of cancer, always get a second opinion. Here's a startling fact. And this I know from friends of mine who have had these issues. The tests for prostate cancer cannot tell the difference between a yeast infection and cancer. And they always will tell you that you have cancer. 50 to 75% of the men diagnosed with prostate cancer don't have cancer at all. But here's the problem. Once they're railroaded into getting chemo, then there's no way to determine if you had cancer or not, because it basically destroys your body, destroys your immune system. And so have you ever heard of anybody who was classified as dying from chemo? No, never. You will never see it, you will never hear it in the 50 to 60 years of cancer treatment with chemo radiation therapy. Nobody has ever been listed as dying from chemo, when the vast majority of them, that's what they die from. They die before the cancer would have ever killed them, if they had cancer in the first place. There is no legitimate alternative testing of cancer, alternative cancer treatments. It's not allowed. I've seen some, and it will say at the end, oh, this could be considered a novel treatment for cancer, talking about Laetril, talking about some of the other herbs, cannabis. A lot of people, when I asked people for alternative treatments for cancer on my show a number of weeks ago, many people wrote in about the success using cannabis. It is available in California, but you cannot ship it to any other state in the union because people the government is this fear factor of shipping marijuana around. But it's not the same. But it is not the same. It's not cultured the same. And it certainly could be shipped to centers where people could pick it up. But all of this is illegal to keep the drug wars going. That's a whole nother issue, where maintaining illegal drugs is fueling the international drug trafficking and all of the issues that go on with it. And of course, the CIA is the biggest drug trafficker in the country. They always have been. That's what a lot of people don't understand. They fuel their activities with drug money. Bill Clinton, George Bush, if you ever want to read a book, the book is called Compromised: Clinton, Bush, and the CIA. It is by a guy named Terry Reed, who was a pilot in the Iran-Contra, moving arms to Latin America and bringing back cocaine. This was with the early 1980s, the Bush-Clinton cartel basically working on Amina, Arkansas. So if you want a real eye-opener about who these people who later became president in the operations of the CIA, and they're still operating that way and maintaining the drug laws, the only drug dealers they eliminate are their competition. But at any rate, that's another story. That's what I'm saying at the beginning of this show. I talked about the absolute corrupt nation of this country. It is so far beyond belief that a lot of people don't believe it. I can't believe that. Well, no. That's because you've been living with your head in the sand for the last 50 years, and you can't pull your head out of the sand. That's why this country can't wait for the rest of these people to wake up. That's why I'm talking about First Nation. You have tons of illegal immigrants in this country who now vote. What are they voting for? Well, gee, they think the guy in office is going to let them stay here. That's what they're voting on. It does nothing to do with democracy, and there's enough of them to swing an election. That's why they are preventing looking at IDs, etc., when people go to vote. The upcoming election is just a sham. Ron Paul has clearly won the majority of the primaries, and guess who's there? A guy named Romney. And our good old boy in the White House, Obama. What a mess. Back to the cancer issue. When you take your automobile to the car mechanic, he puts a device on there and he measures, and okay, here's the part that's having a problem. They replace it and you go on your way. There are better diagnostics for your automobile than you have for your body. When you go to the doctor, he sits down and asks you a bunch of questions. Okay, well, maybe they'll do a blood test. Oh, wow. And they come back. It's incredible how little they can tell you about your problem when you get done. So what does the doctor do? he writes a prescription that puts a mask on, that clouds the symptoms. He tries to cure the symptoms of your problem. There's no curing of the problem, and that's like cancer. So as part of this series on cancer, I want to explain what cancerous cells are, what are they doing, why are they doing what they're doing. When I was at Tulane University, I had my biophysics course. It was given by a medical doctor from the Tulane Medical School. He said in class, he said, we know what's going on with cancer. They are cells, normal cells, which are subdividing and duplicating because they don't see the cell next to them. These are electrical signals, electrochemical signals that go on between the cells. And if a cell does not see the next cell, it's like when you have a cut in your hand. The cells start reproducing until they come in contact with other cells, and then they stop. And that forms the scar tissue that seals up a wound. Okay, now there are ways. Vitamin E is one of the things that you put on cuts. And you take vitamin E, and what that does is it turns that scar tissue into normal cells again. So we know how to control some of this. But what happens with cancer? Some chemicals, foreign chemicals, a lot of times get in there, block the signals between the cells, and they cannot see the cell next to them. So basically they say, well, there's a gap here. I have to start reproducing my kind of cell, whether it's in the liver, whether it's in the kidney, in the bladder, if it's in the lungs or whatever. So that's what tumors are. That's the unadulterated, unabated growth of normal cells. That's what tumors are. Okay, so how do you stop cancer? Okay, this is the issue. The current method is the doctor goes in with a knife, cuts it out, and then gives you chemo. Basically, the concept is that the cancer cells will die before all of the rest of your cells in your body, but you have to bring your body down to the point where it's just about dead. And then if you come back from that, you are classified as cured or in remission. What are some of the other possibilities? Okay, there are chemicals, there are enzymes, there are things that in plants, there are organic chemicals, there are long chain organic chemicals that can get into your system. There are ways of delivering them. One of the possible ways is that people are using baking soda, which, like, you know, when you pour baking soda on a battery acid, it just dissolves it instantly. Your body is basically non-acidic. So a lot of people who have cancer are very acidic. So you have to get rid of that. Well, how do they do that? Well, what people have been doing is they mix it with either molasses or some other sweet sugar-based food. You mix the baking powder and you take it. The cancer thrives on acidic food. So basically they're going to grab onto that sugar, but attached to that sugar is the bicarbonate soda, and that will kill the cancer cell. Okay, so these are techniques. These are understood what's going on. Why has the medical community not researched these? Why are there not alternative treatments? Also, detection of cancer. Most people, when cancer is detected by the medical community, most people are in stage 3 or 4 of cancer. How is it that the medical community has no method of predetermining cancer? There are some screenings, like, say, a colonoscopy. That's standard for people over 45. But it costs $3,000 to $4,000. How absolutely absurd. There should, and that's just one test. It would be astronomically expensive for a person to go in and have all the tests done to screen for cancer, and most of those do not cover your whole body. And if you do get a result back, there's a 75% chance that it's a false positive. you don't have cancer, it's telling you that you have an infection someplace, but the doctors will interpret it. This is the mess of the cancer industry, medical industry today. So people are out there, and I've experienced this over the past year with friends of mine that are struggling with this, and they're calling around trying to find alternatives. What will work? They're home administering various things because they won't go to the doctor. Is this the most absurd thing on the planet? And also, then they want to know, is something working? There's no way to test because the medical community won't test for you. They won't tell you if a certain thing is working or not. They only, Johnny, one note, they only want to deal with cancer therapy with chemo radiation. Johnny, one note, 50 years, it's the absolute failure, and I can't wait till all these people are out of business. On to the next topic. This past week, NASA, SOHO satellite, there's a lot of monkey business going on here. And I've been asked by certain people to examine what's going on. So basically, and for a long time, the SOHO satellite, there have been artifacts and people claim, oh, there's a mothership next to the sun, when these are basically camera artifacts. Well, the things that they're showing now are not camera artifacts. They look like little objects that are near the sun, and all of a sudden they move away. These are not the typical type of camera artifacts that have been on the SOHO camera. These look very real, and so what I am starting to determine here is that NASA is actually phoning up this data. And then they quick take it down, and then someone pops up on the internet and says, oh, look, NASA is hiding data, and it's of these UFOs. Okay, now you have a lot of very gullible UFO people out there, but there's a lot of people who are very serious about the UFO issue. They're studying this worldwide. But, and I have said for a long time, this is something that Wernher von Braun, his secretary, told to the public after von Braun had died. They said the four stages of control, and we've been through three of these. One was the Cold War. That was meant to provide decades of control of the United States and Russia, keeping the military-industrial complex funded, well-funded, through all this time up through Reagan. Then there was going to be the false flag terrorist events. And the final stage, according to Wernher von Braun, was a false alien invasion. And it looks like NASA is prepping this. I'm also seeing NASA being very much involved in a false flag event where they're going to claim that a solar event took down the grid. And as I said before, when that happens, you're going to know because other countries in the world, their grids, they're not going to buy into this plan. And so their grid systems are going to be working okay, and ours is not. So that'll be a good indicator that it was a false flag, false event. And only the U.S. being affected, that's the type of thing to look for. But regarding the so-called alien motherships around the sun, somebody is going through a lot of work. Could these be real? Possibly. Could they be phonied up by NASA? Possibly. The end result is very simple. You cannot trust anything that comes out of NASA. Not anything. Just to give an example, NASA has been caught putting up phony pictures of comets coming by the sun. Many of them are real. The ones I've talked about, many comets coming by the sun. But there was one in particular that they painted coming down by the sun, and the comet kept the same shape, the same form, and it was just repainted. The tail didn't point away from the sun. It was a very, very poor job of photoshopping, but NASA put that up there. And so all I can tell you is they have been caught eliminating data. They have been caught taking the feeds down when important things happen. They have been caught falsifying images in the Soho images. And so the basic result is they cannot be trusted at all. And anything that comes out of NASA, remember, a lot of people think of NASA as a bunch of scientists sitting around doing their science. Well, no, NASA is a very controlled agency. When Golden came in there in the mid-90s, his job was to put the cap on NASA and to make it into an agency, a security agency. And that is what happened. That's when they started digging caves. NASA bought that big cave digging equipment, started putting caves in. NASA is not the nice little space agency that they propound to be. And the little tinker toys that they have moving around the solar system or on Mars are just that, tinker toys. It's just a cover, it's a front for what's really going on in the space agency. A great example, remember the Super Bowl year with Janet Jackson? One of the main issues of that day was when the national federal budget came out for the year. And that was on the back page of the paper. What was on the front page of the paper was Janet Jackson, okay, at the Super Bowl. Okay, we all know about that. But that was just smoke and mirrors. That was a story to cover up what was really going on. If you looked into the budget, the Navy had a line item on their budget for $60 billion, and it was that year the national budget for NASA was $17 billion. So we're talking over three times the budget of NASA in a single line item for the Navy for hardware procurement for outer space. Okay, something's going on. A lot is going on, and the public is not privy to it. I quickly want to talk about the wind. The wind in various parts of the country has been extreme. There are other people I've talked to, and they say, yeah, we haven't seen any wind at all. And so here is what's happening, and I appreciate this. A lot of times listeners send in information. This one is from another person named James, a listener. And here is a base reflectivity chart of the United States from May 23rd. And I very much appreciate them sending this in. This is something that it looks like somebody has been playing with the laser satellites here. There are probably 50 microcell storms across the United States, but they're all in nice little patterns, like chicken pox, so to speak. And I know in one of them centered on Minneapolis. That's interesting. One on Duluth. These are centered on major cities, I've noticed, a lot of them, around Chicago area, around the lake area, around Chicago, around the northeastern area of the United States. Was one exactly on top of Nashville, Tennessee. Okay, so here's the point, that these look like small microcell storms, but they're evenly distributed. Like I say, they look like chicken pox on the United States map. So what I'm starting to get the feeling here is that somebody is playing with the weather. Why are they doing this? Because I think that that could be part of a scenario. Remember, weather can be used to isolate areas, rain, flooding, and if you can create storm systems in a certain area, you can basically shut down traffic in those areas. So would that be used as part of a initial lockdown, so to speak, on the United States when the power grid goes or when some other event happens? The control of weather would be also used to shut down activity of people. So at any rate, that's what I see happening here. Somebody's doing a little bit of experimentation on the weather systems here. Okay, just a quick wrap up on the solar eclipse of this past week. I got a lot of feedback on that, and great pictures people had sent in. It was called what is called an annular eclipse, in which the moon is farther away than normal, so it does not completely block the sun. And so there's a ring around the edge of the sun. So I had some great pictures. Thanks, everybody, for sending those in. And I got a number of calls from people telling me that they were in the path and seeing it. So that was very interesting this past week. Just a quick note on Fukushima. This past week, also May 23rd, here's an article from Nature. Fukushima's doses tallied. Here's the official report of the, I love this name, United Nations Scientific Committee on the Effects of Atomic Radiation, UNSCEAR, in Vienna. Okay, they published their results in the journal Nature, and right there you know it's misinformation. Nature in Europe, in England, and the journal Science in the United States. These are the misinformation sources, peer-reviewed, top-of-the-line peer-reviewed journals with peer misinformation, especially when it comes to topics like this, or especially space science and astronomy. But anyway, the unclear, I call it unclear, it's UNSCEAR, the United Nations Scientific Committee on the Effects of Atomic Radiation, has proclaimed that there was minimal risk from Fukushima. They said around 170 of Fukushima's workers were had a slight elevated risk of cancer due to exposure, and they showed two guys in white suits, obviously Japanese workers in their white suits, with the destroyed reactor number 4 in the background. And this is complete garbage. Complete garbage. That's the best thing I could say about this. And they're not talking about any of the major issues at Fukushima. They are not talking about the elevated levels of radiation in the United States, especially on the west coast of the United States. They're not talking about the elevated levels of radiation in the ocean or the continuing damage to the ocean. They're not talking about a single issue here. It's just a feel-good article to make the government look like like nothing's going on. The reality is that reactor number 4 is in grave danger. The reporting of the radiation already released, there's an estimated 18,000 people dead already from this event. A lot of people with developing cancer early. And as a result, there are no statistics available, real statistics available. But here's an article that appeared in Nature News. A lot of this information I know is available elsewhere, but it was an article written by a guy named Mike Adams. He's an editor of Natural News, naturalnews.com. And this article came out, I don't see the date here. But at any rate, it's a recent article. The reality, and I've talked about this on my show too, I'm just referencing this article because it's a great summary. Reactor number 4 is in critical condition. Here it quotes from Dr. Robert Alvarez, Senior Policy Advisor to the Secretary and Deputy Assistant Secretary for National Security and the Environment, the U.S. Department of Energy. Robert Alvarez is famous for other reasons also, but anyway, a nuclear physicist. And so here, his review is quite stark and different from what is being published in Nature magazine. It says that the number 4 pool is about 100 feet above the ground, is structurally damaged, and is exposed to open elements. If an earthquake or other event were to cause this pool to drain, this would result in a catastrophic radiological fire involving nearly 10 times the amount of cesium-137 released by Chernobyl. the infrastructure to safely remove this material was destroyed, as it was with the other three reactors. Spent fuel cannot be simply lifted into the air by a crane as if were routine cargo. In order to prevent severe radiation exposures, fires, and explosions, it must be transferred at all times in water and heavily shielded structures into dry casks. As this has never been done before, the removal of the spent fuel from the pools and the damaged Fukushima reactors will require a major and time-consuming reconstruction effort and will be charting in the unknown. This is amazing. Once again, absolute government cover-up. The journal Nature from England publishing this garbage, and just the reality in the world and what's coming out of standard science is so different. Okay, I'm going to move on to the main science topic. I wanted to explain how the sun works. And the reason I'm doing this is because National Geographic in their June issue came out with an article, Solar Superstorms. Let me just start by saying that standard science, the model of the sun, is as follows. It's totally incorrect. They're saying that the nuclear engine of the sun is in the core. Okay, if you follow that model to its logical physics conclusions, and I and everybody that ever went through physics programs has done these calculations, that core is estimated to be a very small part of the center of the sun, surrounded by a hydrogen-helium atmosphere, primarily hydrogen-helium, other elements, of course, in there, minor elements, but primarily hydrogen-helium, some carbon, some oxygen, some iron, some other elements. But the point is that if you follow that radiation, that heat that comes off that central core, if this were true, would radiate outwards, and to pass through the solar atmosphere to get to the surface would take about 1 million years by the method of X-ray transfers. In other words, an X-ray is given off. It immediately is absorbed by an adjacent atom, in which it is absorbed and re-emitted. And this process for that X-ray energy to work its way up to the surface of the sun would take about 1 million years. The end result statistically is that the surface of the sun should be a perfectly smooth sphere at around 6,000 degrees, and orange in color, slightly yellow-orange, as we see. The surface of the sun is anything but that. It is violent, it has eruptive storms, it has magnetic cycles, and it has a corona outside that is millions of degrees. The surface of the sun changes. It's variable. It has holes that develop. They're called sunspots, and out of those sunspots occasionally come flares. There's a wind, an electrical wind that comes off from the surface of the sun. None of this, absolutely zero, none of this is predicted or accounted for by the nuclear fusion core model of the sun. And I love this. Okay, I'm going to read one sentence out of the National Geographic article, which, of course, is a mouthpiece for standard science. It's talking about the Solar Dynamics Observatory captured a coronal mass ejection using different wavelengths of light that reflect temperatures in the layers of the sun's atmosphere. The temperatures in the relatively cool chromosphere are a mere 90,000 degrees Fahrenheit, but rise rapidly to almost 2 million degrees in the corona above it. Why the sun's atmosphere gets hotter farther from its surface remains a mystery. That's all you need to read from this National Geographic article. The main construction, the heat construction of the sun, the heat equation of the sun, these scientists don't have any clue how it works. Once again, after, 60 years of physics and solar physics, when I was at Cornell, I sat down and talked with a guy named Hans Bethe. Nobel Prize winner, and what his work was, what he won the Nobel Prize for, was for developing what they call the chemical equation. These are actually nuclear equations for the development of larger atoms from hydrogen, from helium, and as they build up through nuclear fusion, building up the higher mass atoms in the solar engine, and thus producing the fusion energy of the sun. That's what he won the Nobel Prize for. And I sat down and I talked to him, and he realized that there were major problems with that model. Something was wrong. They were able to produce nuclear weapons, A-bombs, with the idea that you compressed hydrogen and helium, basically deuterium, and you could make a big explosion using that method. So it worked in practice, but it didn't account for what was seen on the sun, what was going on the sun. At the time, I had developed the concept that the surface, the fusion of the sun was at the surface, and one had to develop a mechanism for this to keep going on. What was the ongoing method of fusion on the sun? Well, the ongoing method was lightning bolts in the atmosphere, and when I was at Cornell, another little thing was happening at the time. The Pioneer and the Voyager spacecraft were passing the planet Jupiter and Saturn. And what was perfectly obvious from that data, which was buried by NASA scientists, was that those planets, so-called planets, I call them small stars, had solar winds. They had all the same properties of the sun. Jupiter gave off many times, about three times the energy that it received from the sun, including on the dark side of the planet. It was giving off energy, and there was no available source for that. So what did scientists do? They said, oh, well, if the core collapses at such a rate in an ongoing collapsing mechanism, then that could generate heat. Well, there was no physical evidence for Jupiter ever going through any form of collapse. And how could this go on for billions of years? No, it was very clear that Jupiter had all of the properties, including its own capacitor, and Saturn, a smaller little star or planet, if you will, was generating much more energy than Jupiter, and certainly much more energy for its size, was much more active. So clearly something else was going on. And in Jupiter, in Saturn, you could see, you could detect the lightning bolts that were the cause of the low level of fusion in the upper atmosphere of Jupiter and Saturn. Okay, so back to the sun. That was the same thing that was going on. The end result of that would be basically a super atom, with separation of charge being one of the side effects of this fusion process. The end effect would be blasting protons out the surface of the sun, and that explains the solar wind. The corona of electrons, by the way, the National Geographic article doesn't mention that the corona is a field of relativistic electrons around the sun. How do relativistic electrons stay around a gravitational body? Well, they wouldn't. They would go flying off at near the speed of light. So science, standard science, has a major problem. They cannot explain the surface activity of the sun. They cannot explain the solar wind. They cannot explain why the solar corona of millions of degrees of relativistic electrons is circling the sun. None of this makes any sense, according to the standard solar model. But like everything in standard science, just like cancer research, it's rooted in tradition, and nobody's going to change their story. So at any rate, the real story is that the fusion of the sun is at the surface. In the mid-90s, when I was working with the Russian scientists from the University of Novosibirsk, and Dr. Alexei Dmitriev and his group did a very simple experiment. They took an X-ray detector and they scanned across the sun. This experiment is described in my weather book. the Principia Meteorologia, the physics of sun, earth, weather. But basically what they discovered is that the core of the sun is very big. It's much, much bigger than previously thought. And the core is cool. It's much cooler than the surface. The fusion, in fact, is coming from the atmosphere of the sun. So how does that maintain a cloud of relativistic electrons around it? Well, this turns out that as the surface of the sun is like a super atom, and so the electrons circling the sun are like a super atom, basically the same concept as fusion, as ball lightning. It's a super atom condition that we can duplicate on Earth. If you take a big bank of 12-volt batteries, hook them together, and then discharge them between electrodes, basically, if there's enough, what it does with lightning, for example, is it breaks down water. You're left with hydrogen. The oxygen goes away, but you're left with basically a massive super hydrogen atom. That's what ball lightning is all about. But it's the same condition as the sun. The protons in the center held together by magnetic fields and the electrons circling around the outside. It's basically a super atom. That's what the sun is doing. When the solar wind, when the explosions occur in the sun, there is a separation of charge. It breaks the electrons away from the hydrogen and helium atoms, and the protons and alpha particles go in one direction, outwards, and they are accelerated by the electron cloud that's surrounding the sun. When the corona opens up, those particles fly through. That's what causes the solar wind. Okay, so all of this is explained by my model. And the sun is a generating engine. Now, there's one little problem with all of this. The sun doesn't have enough hydrogen to keep this process going for billions of years. So there has to be a source of hydrogen atoms on an ongoing basis coming into the sun. This is all fairly complex solar physics, but the end result is that, yes, we could have solar flares that affect the Earth. Are we going to have them? It's a possibility. Is NASA going to use this as a cover story for a false flag event? I think that is in the cards. I'm saying that, and I don't know when it might happen. But the fact also that National Geographic is pumping this idea, making a big cover story out of it, tells me that the disinformation sources are very active on this topic. This is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.